As we get set for the Christmas weekend, this is the best of the Bob McCowan podcast, yours truly, along with John Shannon. Every once in a while, we corral an owner of a franchise or two to come on this program. And we've got one guy that we only talked to one time and one guy that we talk to all the time.
Well, you know, and both are outspoken, both have lots of opinions, and both are trying to make their way to get to the Stanley Cup. One's a little closer than the other, Bob.
Well, Tom Dundon owns the Carolina Hurricanes, and we enjoyed our chat with him. You'll get a chance to listen to some of that. And our pal Eugene Melnick, who talks to us whenever he wants to talk to anybody.
That's right.
It seems, at least. And usually manages to get himself in some level of trouble, although I'm not sure on this episode.
He did okay.
I think he was all right.
Yeah. Happy holidays, Bob.
Same to you. Tom Dundon, Eugene Melnick, today on the Bob McCowan podcast. Bob McCown, John Shannon back with you. This is a gentleman that we've talked to a couple of times back in the days when we did radio and television, but we did it always by phone. It's first opportunity to go face-to-face, so to speak, via Zoom. The owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, Tom Dundon, is with us. And Tom, thanks a lot for your time. We know it's always busy. And my friend Shannon over there will be... regaling you with hockey questions left, right, and center, but we'll get to that. But I was I've never had the opportunity to talk to you in the past about your involvement in the golf business, specifically with Top Golf. You were an early investor in that process and project. I'm intrigued by what your experience was. What attracted you to Top Golf?
Well, good to be with you guys. So, you know, I wish this story had more something to make me seem more sophisticated or intelligent. But what actually happened was Topgolf had a location in Dallas when they had only three or four locations. They had taken over an old driving range and put up a facility that was not up to today's standards. And the food was like you'd get at a ballpark. Right. It was, and the service wasn't good. They had like, you go get your balls out of the big machine. there's really no technology other than the ball had a chip in it. And you would track it and you could get a score, but they hadn't, they like say no TVs, didn't have food. Service was bad. Company was undercapitalized, and I didn't even know anything about it, but my kids went to a birthday party and it was not very good. And there were lines, you know, people waiting to get in. And I remember thinking, why does everybody want to do this? Like the food's bad and all these other things that were underwhelming. And then 6 months later, somebody came to me and said, they're out of money. Can you help? And I looked at the numbers. I don't know. I don't like it. And then they came back to me 6 months later. And my kids, I'd been trying to get them to play golf with me when they were younger. And they thought golf was boring and just weren't interested. So I thought, okay, maybe I go invest in this business that's tied to golf and we can improve some things and maybe it'll catch their interest because it's here in Dallas. And so that's why I did it. I did it mostly so my kids would like me for the most part.
Initially. So the evolution in that business has been extraordinary. And anybody who's been to a Top Golf facility knows it's not just a driving range with bad food.
Right.
It's got good food. Bob, it's got good food now. Come on now.
That's what I said.
Except for that, the cheese sauce on the nachos. So, I mean, everybody's got the same cheese sauce. Come on.
Yeah. Well, we don't do the cheese sauce, but yeah. So what I did was as part of my investment, I wanted it moved to Dallas because the headquarters wasn't in Dallas. And partner of mine named Eric Anderson, who was heavily involved with the board, then kind of shared a lot of the same things. And we wanted make the food great, make the experience great, put in the technology. So it just took capital, you know, capital probably they didn't have quite the vision of making it really nice. Maybe initially it was going to be a little less fancy. I don't think it's fancy, but so yeah, we put in the money to build out the technology and build out the experience. And then we had the capital to go grow it. And you know, that's been 7-8 years now. It's been a while.
So then, I don't know how many people are aware of this. Last fall, there was a merger between Topgolf and Callaway. which seems like a rather logical progression, but whose idea was that? Did they come to you? Did you go to them?
Yeah, so Callaway has been our partner in Topgolf. They actually had an investment in Topgolf that predated my investment. And the CEO, a guy named Chip Brewers, really well-respected guy, runs a great company. They were on the, we were on the board together for a long time. And after COVID, when no one would could go, no, most Topgolfs were shut down and the golf business was doing great. And it just sort of seemed like the right idea to put it together. They knew the business well. They have this great golf business and brand that was generating cash flow even during COVID times, right? People could still go play golf even when Topgolf wasn't open. So it just sort of made sense to put these things together. So that actually just closed maybe 3 months ago where the company was listed.
Right.
I think it's going fairly well so far.
Now you're a director of Callaway, but not a director at Topgolf anymore. Is that was sort of a natural progression or what?
Well, there's only one company now, so.
There's only one, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not the greatest board member in the world.
Well, do tell. Why do you think that's the case?
We're saving that for the hockey questions.
Yeah. Well, it's not too different whether it's hockey or Topgolf, right? You've got to let, management has to do their job, right? So you can have an opinion and you can have your experiences and your conversations, but ultimately the people who are there every day better know it better than me, right? Like I'd like to think I can help, but you know, Topgolf's all over the world and there's all these locations and Callaway has great management. If I can help too much, something's wrong, right?
There is an obvious synergy between golf and hockey. I don't know how well aware of this you are. I assume you are, but most hockey players play golf and a whole lot of hockey players, good hockey players, NHL hockey players play very good golf. There are all kinds of single digit handicap golfers who are professional hockey players. Is there any synergy with you in that?
You know, it seems like a lot of the teams when they're on the road and they need something to do, like Topgolf is one of the things that a lot of sports teams, especially like you said, the NHL have more people that either love golf or are pretty good at it and or are good at it. So
yeah,
it's been matter of fact, when I first bought the team, the first time I went on the road, I wanted to see some different arenas and different how other people did it. And I went to Nashville and the team had a day off. So I took the team to Topgolf. It's the first time I kind of met everybody and just, you know, shake everybody's hand, introduce yourself,
yeah.
You know, tell them you're available if they need anything. So that was the first kind of thing I did with them all. And yeah, it turned quickly into, you know, gambling with each other and having fun. So it was good to see for sure.
Before we dig deep into hockey, do you get people phoning you all the time asking for investor dollars? I mean, the thing is you've created such a profile, Tom, whether fair or not, you're a bit of the perception is you're a little bit of a riverboat gambler and hey, come with me and let's make some money together. Do you get lots of calls?
I get some calls. Yeah. I get some calls. I tend to only do things with people I know and trust. So I feel bad because, you know, you want to help everybody. I've been very lucky in life and, you know, unfortunately a lot of the things that come across, you know, if someone's young and has nothing to lose, no family, and they want to try something. And, you know, I'm assuming you all are like me that when you were 22, you sleep on the couch. And if, you know, you go wait a table or bus or mow a lawn, you did what you had to do, but you didn't have anybody else. You just had to take care of yourself. What's hard is when someone's got a job, has an idea, and they have something to give up, right? And that's tougher to tell somebody, I'm not sure your idea is good enough to give up safety. And so that's what I always struggle with is I love the idea of people going out trying something and making money, but I hate the idea of the reality is most things, it's a very low probability of having the kind of success people envision. So that's always my struggle is I want to encourage them, but I also know how much do you have to give up, right? If you're 22, you should do it. If you're 42, you might want to think about your outcomes.
So when your buddy Cuban's on Shark Tank, you kind of go, what are you doing, Mark?
I ask about it all the time because the deals are, you know, for him, the paperwork is more than what he could actually make, right? He's obviously, but he loves that whole entrepreneurial help people, you know, so he's got a whole staff set up to help these folks. And he kind of sees it as the American dream and his way to sort of give back. You know, he doesn't really look at it as a moneymaker. And I think he likes being on TV, which is not mine. I don't
you
have
think?
A yeah, he kind of likes it.
All right. So let's talk about hockey. Ever since you've touched this team, all it does is seem to get better. What's the magic elixir?
I mean, they had good players when I got here. Right. And then, you know, I think the big thing is making Rod the coach, right? I think that it seemed a little risky at the time because he had never done it before. And he had been an assistant coach on a team that didn't have much success. When I came in and thought about, you got to change the culture, we have to restart. You know, I think the idea wasn't to take an assistant coach and promote him or whatever. And, you know, the more you're around him and the more you talk to people within the organization, you knew that maybe where they were as an organization didn't have anything to do with the fact that he had been there. But that's probably the main thing. There were a couple really good players, but there was a person here that just was really good at getting the most out of everyone and creating a culture. And it happened that he loves the Hurricanes, right? Like that wasn't something a lot of people could say. And even when we were no good, he still loved it. And he thought about it the way it was when he played and they were good.
Okay. So you've opened the box. You've mentioned it before I did. His contract's up. Are you concerned? Is he going to be the coach in October?
Yeah, of course. I've never been concerned. I never really had a problem keeping good people, right? Like if I want to keep them, we keep them and we find a way, and he's the best. So it's not close to the top of my worries.
So they're the contract sitting in the drawer and you're just waiting for the day that it's a quiet day and you can announce to everybody that Rod Brindamore is coming back?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's that linear, but it's, I have no interest in owning a team without him coaching it. So he's going to coach it.
The other guy in your organization that fascinates me and doesn't get very much credit outside of your organization is a guy named Eric Tolsky.
Yeah.
Can you tell everybody what he does for your organization that makes him so special?
You know, it's hockey's tough, right? Because the people that have done it a long time believe they can see it and they know who the good players are. But everybody in hockey, scout, GM, player, coach, they all have that similar skill set, right? They've played it, they've watched it. Hard to think. I remember when I got to Carolina and we had all the scouts were in for their meeting, and I went into the meeting and I said, look, I'll stipulate that you all know hockey and that you're really good at this, but I also believe every other team has a group of people with similar backgrounds, similar experiences, and similar insights into what makes a good hockey player. So we have to be honest about the fact that the Carolina Hurricanes might not have an advantage at a bunch of people that know hockey evaluating hockey players, right? Like if we're just being honest, what are the chances we happen to have the best scouts that give us a bigger advantage? Doesn't mean we don't have really good scouts who work really hard and add a lot of value, but how are we going to be better? And I think what we try to do is take what Tolsky can do, which is analyze things with no emotion, with no experience in terms of what we have found people that have grown up in hockey believe, and sort of take that art and science and put it together, right? And make sure you challenge what people's eyes see. And then the hockey people are supposed to make sure that we don't just take what the analytics say. And finding that balance is all we try to do. And I think he gives us an advantage there because he's super smart. he actually knows hockey really well. Like, he's not just a guy that doesn't watch it, love it. He's passionate about it. And we have this ability to have that constant struggle between what the coaches and scouts see and what the data says. And that matches up sometimes, right? Like, you don't have to be very smart to know Aho's pretty good, right? So we all agree on that. Tulsky can't help us on Aho, right? But there are always players that surprise us all, both ways, better or worse than the market thought. And that's where you hopefully can gain some insight into, take a closer look at these players. It looks like there may be something the market misses, or take a closer look, the market overvalues these players. And, you know, finding a way to interact is I think what he's supposed to help us do.
Tom Dunzen is with us, the majority owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. And I want to address the analytics portion of what you just said. We'll take a quick break and come back with more with Tom when we continue after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you, and Tom Dunzen is here, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. You mentioned the word analytics, and I would say to you, you would probably understand, you're a few years younger than John and I, respectfully.
Hold on now.
Okay, you're more than a few years younger than John. Analytics for me, and maybe in part for John, is something that has come along since we established our opinions on how things work. And we come from the era of the eye test, where you look at a player and you make a judgment on them. And that happened with scouts as much as anything else. You know, radar guns came in baseball and for hockey with shooting and all kinds of other things. But you're kind of in the middle a little bit. Are you an analytics guy? Do you believe all of that's all the stuff you see?
I say, I think you just have to have balance. I think if you ignore it, I'll beat you. And if you only use it, we'll beat you, right? So if you think analytics can build a hockey team, you're probably going to have a really bad hockey team. But if you think that your eye test can beat somebody who will take the analytics and make it part of the evaluation, you're probably at a disadvantage. And I think most teams in all sports get that, right? That there's, like I say, there's art and science. The coaches inherently should think less about analytics because they're building a relationship. They're in there with their players. They've got a feel every day. And that can be good or bad, right? Maybe there's a player who does it all right, tries really hard, does everything great. They're going to give that person a little more leeway. And maybe they're right, because that all those things affect the culture of the team. Maybe there's another player who's a little better, who's not a great teammate or, you know, who knows? And the coach is going to not like that player as much, but they could be really good helping you win. So you just have to be able to have those debates. But I don't think it's a silver bullet.
You're a sports fan, though, I gather, generically speaking. No sport has adopted analytics more or greater than baseball has. Do analytics, in your opinion, work better for a sport like baseball than they do for a sport like hockey?
Yeah, absolutely, because the play stops, right? Every time the play stops. So you know exactly that the guy hitting in baseball, it doesn't mean no other player has any impact on that transaction, right? They're up there against the pitcher. You can isolate it. Hockey's not like that. So if someone gets to play with our best players more often, or someone doesn't get to play with the same players, it's clearly going to get some different outcomes. So it's very hard to isolate individual impact in hockey. Very difficult.
Just follow up on Bob's point about you being a sports fan. What do you know about hockey now that you didn't know when you bought the team?
Maybe there's just a little more drama, you know, like I'm not playing with the right person, or, you know, coach doesn't like me, you know, I should be in the, you know, like I was used to that with my kids' sports, right? Whereas like my kid's not playing, what's going on? I never really thought about the fact that, you know, these are human beings, and if they're not on the power play, maybe dad's calling or their wife's asking or their agent's mad. And you know, what we've tried to do in Carolina is it's just about the culture. It's about the team. It's about the culture. And I think I always believe that in business, but I realize maybe in hockey, it's more important than anywhere else I've ever seen because they're together all the time. And it's not fair. Someone gets to be PP1 and someone gets to be PP2 and someone doesn't get to be on it at all. And whoever's not on it thinks they should be because they have been their whole life.
Actually, you've tweaked me to something because I get a sense that you really know your players. You know the guys on that roster and you talk to the guys in the roster. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? And because, I mean, if I'm the coach or I'm the manager or I'm Eric Tolsky, but, you know, Sebastian Aho can talk to the owner. Boy, oh boy, that's a hierarchy that can be difficult at times.
Yeah, and I think it would be more difficult if he could talk to me and have me talk to Rod on his behalf, which I would never do.
Right.
I want the players to know that we care about them, that we're going to be upfront with them, and we're never going to let anybody mistreat them. We're going to give them great medical, great strength conditioning. They're going to know their expectations. We're going to have a competitive team. Like, these are the things I can help them with. But I've never got involved with who plays or who they play with or any of that kind of stuff because that would ruin everything, right? And so Rod's not insecure. Don Waddell's not insecure. So if I talk to a player, I think they're pretty aware that I'm not talking to them about, well, my coach is no good. Why is he treating me bad? Like, that would be, if a player tried to talk to me about that, I think they're crazy. And I'd be crazy to do it. It would ruin your culture. And you read about this stuff happening. It's kind of silly that would be something that I would think would be a good idea. So what I want with the players, I want them to love it here. I want them to want to play here. I want them to know that if they're here and they do the right thing, we're going to take care of them and we're going to want to keep them here and we're going to win.
Were you convinced Raleigh was a good hockey market? And are you still convinced of that?
I wasn't, honestly. When I bought the team, I wasn't sure because when you went to a game, there was nobody there. And I was told stories about what it would be like if we were good. And then I found out it was true, right, really quickly, because that first year, it went really well. Now, I wanted, as we were getting better, I knew we were pretty good. I wanted people to come sooner. But once they do come, they come and it's pretty enthusiastic and it's a great experience. And so now that's not even the conversation anymore. Yeah. It's not about Raleigh. It's just about how do we win, right? In the beginning, it was, even if we do good, will fans come? Now I know they come. I think the pressure, just like everybody, if you don't win, you get less fans. I think our fan base may be a little more elastic, meaning they may not be true hockey fans, but they're fans of winning, they're fans of entertainment, the experience, the personalities. So we just have to maybe do a little better job than in a core market to make sure our fans are entertained. But when you entertain them, they come.
I got to tell you, Tom, I was working for the league in 2006 when your team won the Stanley Cup. I have never seen a fan base as electric as that building. And you combined it with the magic of tailgating.
Yeah.
It's not a big city, but I'll tell you what, I have friends that work in your organization. I tell them all the time, I'm a closet caniac. I'm a closet caniac because of that fan base and what they love their hockey club, but it's all about winning. And it's a fascinating market analysis.
Absolutely. And it's, like I say, I don't think people think about hockey if you're not winning, but once you win, they just have a lot of fun with it. And I don't know, and this is one of the advantages for most of our players. No one knows if they have a bad game. Like, that's not what they're judging it on. It's, did we have fun? Are we entertained? And right. I've been, since I got here, we're in the entertainment business, right? Now, good players are more entertaining and winning is more entertaining, but we're in the entertainment business. And our fans continually remind you of that because they come out to have fun, like they come out to be entertained. We don't have to, not that it's a bad thing, because if your fans were more into the technical side of hockey, they would stay with you when you're not winning or not entertaining, but that's not the situation we're in. So we have to win. I kind of like it.
In Chicago, they used to say, as many years ago, they used to say there were 20,000 people in the building, but there were probably only 40,000 other hockey fans in the city of Chicago. I wonder if there was a parallel when you took over the franchise in Raleigh, and whether part of your agenda has been to grow that base as widely as you possibly can.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Is even when I first got here, there was still a core amount of people that love the team. And if you don't make the playoffs 8, 9, 10 years, that dwindles, right?
Of course.
And that's rational. And especially if you're in a market where people didn't grow up with hockey, right, for the most part. And so, yeah, that was the whole point, is we weren't going to create a bunch of hardcore hockey fans. Like, people don't do that later in life. But you could create fans of the Hurricanes, fans of the players, fans of the entertainment value. And that's, I think that's what the organization's done a good job of, because I don't think a ton of our fans are watching our rivals play, you know, or keeping up with what everybody else does like they might in other markets. So you just, that wasn't a battle worth fighting to try to make people hockey fans all the time. We had to make them Hurricanes fans, and that's what we're still trying to do.
And yet, I mean, listen, you, the next step for you was to get an outdoor game, and the league gave you an outdoor game, and you got robbed of it because of COVID. So I assume that you're going to get one. So that leads me to the next question. Do you, in October or November, whenever the season starts, you expect to be 60% full, 100% full? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I mean, it changes so fast. I think North Carolina is pushing towards trying to get back to normal. And so, yeah, I think it's some number greater than 50, and whether it's 100, I have no way. I mean, I know no more than anybody else because it changes so quickly, but I'm optimistic that it'll be pretty good next year.
Right. Sorry. One of the keys in building in a city like you have been for the last 4 years is almost invariably you want to see there be more places to go play hockey. Then you want to see more rinks. Are you actively involved in that process in Raleigh?
Yeah, there was we just built a new practice facility adjacent or connected to a 2 rink, which is kind of the big ice rinks now in Raleigh. I'm not sure. It's actually something we've talked a little about, how many more ice rinks, if that actually helps or not, but it's something we've talked about. But we moved our practice facility into the brand new 2-rink complex. And so we're sort of connected in that way with youth hockey. And youth hockey is, for the most part in Raleigh, it's the Junior Canes, and we're involved, but you know, I'm not sure it's gonna be, I still think it's about winning, you know, great coach, great players that are available and accessible in the market, you know, making the arena experience and the TV experience and the social media experience. I think all those things are going to have a more of an impact than having a few more rinks. But if there's more people that want to play, we'll build, you know, building a rink's easy, right? Like if we
had
no rinks available, we'd go build a rink for sure.
Actually, you touched on your social media experience. You might have one of the most creative social media departments in the league. Does that have your fingerprints all over it?
I don't know. I mean, look, I'm always pushing on them to be interesting, right? And you have to be careful because I want to be interesting without being insulting.
Right.
Right. And that's hard sometimes. And so, yeah, they're super talented. They do a really good job. I am not the one coming up with the one-liners or any of those kind of things. I've had one or two things that they put out there on my behalf, but I'll never say what they were. But for the most part, it's Don and I, all we can do is keep reminding them, we got to be interesting. We got to be relevant. You got to entertain our fans. We have this great brand. We have these good characters, these entertainers, these hockey players, and make sure people see their personalities. And that's how they'll get closer to the team.
But Storm Sturge was your idea, though, right?
No, it was Justin Williams. I asked him same thing. I said, "Help me! You know, we need to be more interesting. How can we be more relevant? How can we entertain fans that maybe don't know hockey as a group to the same level they do in other markets?" So what do they know? They know how to have fun, as you mentioned earlier. And so I was at the first game a couple years ago, and I was walking downstairs at the end of the game, and the storm surge happened, and I didn't know what was going on. So wow. I got downstairs. I was appreciative of it.
It was good. Boy, what a signature now. I mean, now if you don't do it, people will be disappointed.
I'm disappointed if we don't do it.
we have run out of time. We thank you again for the opportunity to spend some time with you and learn a little bit more. And we could do this for a lot longer, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity somewhere down the road. We wish your hockey team success, continued success.
Success? Are you kidding me?
Well,
they're better than the Stanley Cup champions right now.
Well, we'll see what happens in the next couple of months, but there'll be a lot of people rooting for you. I can tell you that. Thank you for your time. Yeah, you're most generous with it. We appreciate it.
Good to see you guys again. Have a good show.
I hope so. Tom Dundon, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll come back and wrap it up after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, as per usual on the program. And with us, the owner of the Ottawa Senators, Eugene Melnyk, joins us once again. November 15th was the last time, Melnyk, you were on this program. You projected your hockey team would be better, but acknowledged they might not be good enough given the quality of the other teams in the Canadian division. And I guess that prophecy played out, except, as John and I discussed, your team played very well over the last half of the season. And now you're stuck with this. Well, does that project into next year? You've been around this long enough. Your team is pretty young. Are you super encouraged? Do you believe your team can take the next step necessary, given what you saw over the last 30 or 40 games?
You know, it's... I had a long conversation with the coach, with DJ at the end, just a couple of days ago, and reflected on, okay, so what does this all mean? He gave me one of the best assessments I've ever heard from any coach at any time since I've owned a hockey team, and that includes junior. So I've been at this about almost 24 years, 23 years. And, you know, we went through player by player. What do we need to get there? He basically said, look, we are set for the next 10 years of the team we have, except there's a couple of young ones that need to grow up fairly quickly. We've got some gaps. For example, we need a very good defensive defenseman as a starter. There's two things we need. We need a good defensive defenseman, and we need almost a veteran type center, first line center. And those are obviously not easy to come by. The defenseman, we have one coming, a guy called Sanderson. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be an absolute rock star, that guy. But he's, I think, 18 or something. I mean, he's too young. He should play some games next year with us in the big league. We're hoping that the next year, he's still staying, you know, in college. But, you know, then he'll get into Belleville very quickly, as soon as we can. And just give them a taste. And that's it. And I think next year we should get better. This is a great, great collection of players. And I've seen bad dressing rooms, as everyone has. And this is a group that does exactly what is a coach's dream. And that is they push each other. No, they're young. They all have the same dream. And they're all pulling. And they cajole each other. They can get nasty with each other if they have to, but they don't, you know, they don't. And, you know, they're friends and they're all after the same thing. And there's no, you know, there's none of this prima donna stuff. DJ will get rid of these guys so fast, it'll make your head spin. If he sees one guy showing up in a fedora or some kind of hat coming into the dressing room, I mean, he is curtains. He won't even get to the dressing room. And we don't put up with that crap anymore. And we just lay down the law. And it's not like, let's say, Lou Lamoriello. I mean, he, to me, is a piece of work that I actually, he entertains me. But, you know, he's got rules in that dressing room.
Oh, yes, he does.
You know it better than I do. I just heard about this stuff, that he's you know, you got to have your hair a certain way, you got to dress a certain way, and none of this baloney walking around with hats and you know, some kind of green shiny suits and stuff. Forget about it. So I think the discipline is there. I think the talent is there. The skills are there. The motivation is certainly there. And I think you can't BS these players. They know what they've got around them. And I think we've got a good shot of making the playoffs next year. And it only gets better from there.
Would you as the owner be allowed in the dressing room with the hat you're wearing right now?
Pebble Beach.
I see it's Pebble Beach.
Hey, Eugene, the one thing that Lou does do, and what you're talking about, I think DJ understands that after being around Lou a little bit in Toronto, was he makes the players accountable.
Yeah.
And that's really important. What I want to ask you about is how satisfying is it for you to see a market that not too long ago was very dissatisfied with the way your team played, what was going on with your club? You were getting lambasted personally, and there's a ton of excitement in the capital now. I mean, they are this market's on board. How does that make you feel?
Well, it's, you know, how would you feel if at the end of the day, you know, you put up with all this and knowing full well this is the best thing for the team to do. You know, it's it was not easy. I'm telling you, when you drive into town and there's a billboard telling you to get lost, I mean, it's tough. Melnick out. There's no other way to say it. Melnick out. Get out. And, you know, the press wasn't happy. You know, they had, you know, a free-for-all on slamming me. And I couldn't even imagine doing this in Toronto with, you know, with the press there. But, you know, things got a little out of hand at one point. But it's nice to see. I'm not an I told you so person, but I told you so. Just give it time. We just got to do this, and over time we'll rebuild.
It's funny because you had a corporate event, I want to say 2 years ago at the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
With all of your corporate partners, and you said, listen, we're going to be okay, but we're going to have to be patient, and we're going to have to spend some more money. But you actually told people 2 years ago that this was going to happen.
Right. Well, when you do a rebuild, you know, and it was not just a whimsical thing. We actually sat down and went position by position by position. And I spent 2 days with Pierre Dorion. And it was brutal because I wouldn't let it go. I'd say, well, explain it to me. Well, it's hockey stuff. Explain it to me. I'm not stupid. If I can figure out a molecule, I can figure out a certain type of play. What do you need? Where's the strength? Where's the weaknesses? What do you want to do to the other team? How do you want to play? Do we play the trap from 20 years ago and never have a person buy a ticket again, like New Jersey? Or do you, you know, I remember a player who used to be our captain way back. And his philosophy, he's no longer anywhere near the organization. His philosophy was, everything should be offense. Everything. Just score 5, 6, 7 goals. So you get 4 scored against you, you still win the game. That's another philosophy. And to have a balanced, and Pierre's philosophy was more, you have to balance it. Go the traditionalist route, which was fine with me because that's the one I grew up with and I understood. And then you go position by position. And I think the only place where we failed this year, because we could have gone better, is we made changes to adjust, and that was in goal. We got killed in goal. And, you know, you bring in a top guy. Now, he's now improved himself a lot. And we're hoping that Murray steps up next year. We need him to. But then you got 5 little guys, like young kids. And young in goalie is anything under 25 is very young. That's the other thing I kind of learned over the years is until they're 25, 26, they really don't even start getting into their prime. But if Murray can step up and one of the young ones steps up as a good number 2, then we got the makings of a true contender. I really believe that. And excuse me. And after that, I've got a bunch of 22-year-olds that aren't even close to their prime. And this is where every franchise wants to be. And we took the hard way up. You know, there's different ways of, I was reading a little bit about climbing Mount Everest, not that I'm doing it, but there's different ways of going up Mount Everest. And there's a real, real tough way where everybody dies. And then there's the easier way, which is almost impossible to do anyways. We went kind of halfway between the two. We didn't take the toughest route, but God damn it, we got rid of every fan favorite, like every one of them. There's nobody left. They're all playing for the teams I'm watching, you know? I'm watching three guys on the Islanders were connected to me. And it's just amazing. Then you see the Vegas game. There's Stone is their captain. You know, you go over to the Islanders, there's three guys there. All around the league, you got Pajot.
Dare I remind you of the Washington Capitals, where your 40-year-old goaltender has stood on his head for two games. And Zdeno Chara is there too.
Yeah, I know. I know all these guys. They say, oh boy, you traded this guy away. Yeah, but you know, I kind of got Stutzla for that. And, you know, it was going to be an all-star within 3 or 4 years. It's easy to look in hindsight at some trades that were done that were good and bad. And I think I got to say that I think we're on the plus side of that column. I believe we are.
You do have to sign these kids, though. Sorry. Eugene, you do have to sign them. Like, you're going to have to sign Brady, who, by the way, at this point in right now, might be one of my favorite players to watch in the game.
He's good. Yeah, I know.
Oh, boy. But you have to sign. You got another contract you have to sign him to. It's going to be hard.
Well, it's not hard if you both agree. Look, I think we're on the same planet with Brady's agents and him. And we think that we really believe that he is a leader of the team and is a pivotal part for us. But these things come down to sometimes things that we can't even understand. Mm-hmm. And it's not money. It's something in their heads that somehow they want to do something else. But it's not the case with Brady. I think all it is with us is the season's now over. Everybody's going away. Think about it, and we'll come back. And I don't foresee a problem with signing Brady. I don't. But, you know, 5 years from now, we're going to be running into some serious we're not going to be cap issues. We're going to try to avoid cap issues. And financial issues will not be a problem either. Right. But, you know, you can have five guys like Brady that you got to sign.
Yep.
And it's no different than Leafland right now. You know, you got some real big money in the top four or five guys. And when you've got four or five superstars, that's what you run into.
Does that mean you're going to, Brady's the captain? You're going to make him the
captain? Oh, I didn't say that. No, not at all. That's going to be, you know, what we're all thinking about over the summer and whether he's the person for that. It would have to be someone, whoever it is, they've got to be around for long term. That's the key for us. You can't have a captain there on a bridge contract. It's not going to happen. But he, along with Thomas Chabot, they're both leaders. They're both leaders in the dressing room, which is what you're looking for. And I've been there deep in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that's when these guys really shine. It's not the game in January that matters. It's when you get into these playoffs, it's when the leadership shows up. And they better, if they're not there, you're done. You're going to be wiped out so quick when your head spin.
With Eugene Melnyk, you know, talking about captaincy, I've had this conversation more than a few times over the years. I'm not a big believer in the influence of a captain in professional sports. I think that has changed dramatically since when, you know, the three of us were watching the game as younger people. You know, when George Armstrong was the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Jean Béliveau with the Montreal Canadiens, the sense was that they actually were the leaders. They were the guys. It was an era when, and we all know, the captain was the guy who was supposed to talk to the referees. If you didn't have a C or an A on your uniform, you weren't supposed to talk to the referees.
That's right.
I mean, all that has changed. We get that. And societally, we have changed dramatically. But do you believe that naming the right captain can be influential in the success of the hockey team?
Yeah, I think the reverse is more true. You name the wrong one and you're screwed. You're absolutely screwed. Because then you got a guy of flimsy, you know, everybody kind of looks. Listen, when it's a tight, tight game, 3 minutes to go in a game, and let's say you're in the playoffs and it's a critical game and there's a bad call, you need a guy out there that goes crazy. Goes crazy. And you know what? If he gets fined, he gets fined. But you need somebody that stands up and everybody understands that this guy is about to unleash. And you should be worried about that guy. And I just think it, you need that leadership in the room. You need the person when everybody else is falling apart to stand up and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how we get there. And everybody believes him. That's the key. If you don't believe him, and I don't know, Bob, whether it's changed that. It's changed. A lot of teams name the highest priced guy, you know, that kind of thing.
Or the best player.
Or necessarily the best player, but not the best leader.
Exactly.
I know. But think about it. Were we just naive when we were younger? Or is that still happening today in most teams? We're just, I think, smarter and older. That's all. We're dumb and young.
Well, I guess.
Older at least, Eugene. I don't know about the smarter. Older at least.
I'll give you the smarter. Come on. It's the leadership that's needed. And it's not necessarily the most talented. You know, if you take a look, was George Armstrong the best player on the Toronto Maple Leafs in his
By no means. Never.
Not even close. That's right. But when he spoke, he didn't speak often. But I remember when he did speak, everybody shut up. Yeah. Everybody kind of backed off because he so rarely spoke. But man, I can't remember a time of seeing George Armstrong like go apoplectic, like go crazy. He never did, but man, when he stared you down, he looked vicious.
But the captaincy, Eugene, I think has changed a lot because I think the captaincy, there's a lot of it that isn't for public consumption. I think it's so much in the room now. I think that there's a role to be played by that person amongst the other 19 players in the dressing room. That becomes... what we see is the captaincy is the tip of the iceberg. It's below the water where the captaincy works with his teammates, I think becomes a bigger factor.
I know. And other than the 20 guys in the room, 99% of people will never see that.
Right.
Goes on in there. And it's a question of, you know, if you call somebody out, you better be that leader. Otherwise the rest of them will kill you too. But, I don't know. We'll see. I think that we're going to make the right decision. I think that we are going to sign Brady to a fair contract. And I think that at the end of the day, we are going to search and destroy, trying to find two key pieces to our team that we need to fill. And that's, you know, we've got two great young centers that are stepping up big time. And you got Norris and you got Pinto. This Pinto kid, you know, he came out of the blue. You know, he didn't start being a good player until he was 15 years old. And then he comes to North Dakota and all something about the North Dakota water. Mark my word. I don't know. It's either that or there's truly not a lot to do out there, but they have a fantastic, you know, the best hockey program, I think, in the world. But the guy comes out of there, all of a sudden he's playing second line center. And, but he's like 19.
Right.
I remember my juniors at St. Mike's were that age and,
or older.
Yeah, 2021s. Yep. But in any event, I think that we'll find that missing piece and the defenseman that we need.
I want to change the gears a little bit. We'll take the break first and come back with more. The owner of the Ottawa Senators, Eugene Melnyk, is with us back after these messages. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the program, whether you're watching, listening on podcast or online. Or in Mississauga at Saga 960. Eugene Melnyk is with us today. I want to address, I'm sure John has more hockey questions, but I want to take a moment to address the LeBreton Flats issue because the three of us have talked about this in the past. We know that the last correct me if I'm wrong, the last round proposal, whatever, things didn't resolve themselves. I'm told there are three entities, groups, that are currently involved in negotiating, for lack of a better word, for that piece of property and to do a build there. What can you tell us about where you guys are at?
We're, as far as the Breton Flats is concerned, we're nowhere. We're not involved anymore. That was a bad dream that has ended up in court. And, we had a horrible partner. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't even know this person. And out of the blue, the previous management signed him up. Interesting, today, by the way, is the sixth anniversary of my liver transplant.
Wow.
Ah.
In 30
and
minutes.
And you look good, too. I want to tell you that, you know.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. But, in 30 minutes from now, they slice me open. But the reason I bring it up or it came to mind is that it was during my liver transplant when I was in the hospital that the previous management signed a deal with this guy under my nose. I mean, I was literally right under the knife.
Yeah.
And now it's ended up in a $700 million lawsuit. As far as what we're doing in Ottawa, though, is the better question. That is, I have about 70 acres of land around our arena in Kanata. And in 16 years that I've owned the team, Ottawa has grown westward, which is towards Kanata. Mm-hmm. And it's now that 26-minute drive that felt like forever is no longer a big deal. And I've spent enough time in Toronto to know what traffic is, or any other city. So I think that I like it out in Kanata, but if I can't get anything done there, I've also had proposals of, still staying in the Ottawa area, but going across the river into Gatineau.
Oh, really?
Is the old, remember Hull, now it's Gatineau.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Sure. But there's some beautiful land, beautiful backdrops on Parliament Hill from there. It is closer to downtown. But I'm still committed to Kanata, and I'm looking at sometime in the next 3 to 5 years, committing to one or the other, and I'm going to have to build a new arena. I need a new arena in about 7 years from now.
So there you go. Some of the best of the Bob McCowan podcast from the past 12 months as we take a little vacation here, much to the chagrin of the audience, I'm sure.
Well, not much of a vacation when you think of what's going on in the world, Bob. Still, but you know what? It's a good time to spend your family. Good time to have some quiet time, enjoy some eggnog and some festive spirit.
Happy holidays to y'all from John and I, and we'll see you the first week of January. Bye, everybody.